Everyone hits a bump in the road. What do you do with it? Be inspired as we explore the ways people experience, navigate, and manage the ups and downs and twists and turns in this road trip called life. Welcome to another episode of Bump in the Road. The basic podcast is always free. We also have a premium subscription called Bump 2 that lets you listen in on extended behind-the-scenes conversations with our guests. Check it out at www.bumpintheroad.us. Angela Maxwell is a solo adventurer and an inspiration. Over the last several years, she has walked around the world by herself. Starting in Bend, Oregon, she took off for Australia, New Zealand, Asia, and Europe, then to D.C. and back to Bend. Slow travel allowed her the opportunity to see the world one person, one place, one day at a time. Our conversation embraces exotic travel and courage, but most importantly, we explore the inward journey that results from all great adventures. Angela, welcome to Bump in the Road. If you would, tell our listeners a little bit of your story.
Sure. So I'm Angela, and on May 2nd of 2014, I left Bend, Oregon to walk my way around the world. And although it didn't end up looking anything like what I thought it would by putting a Sharpie marker across a flat paper map, I walked across four continents, 14 countries, a handful of islands. It took 6.5 years. And I went through about 11 pairs of shoes, lots of cup of noodles and oatmeal. And I just finished on December 16th of 2020.
Take us on the trip on a map. Where did you go? You started at Bend, Oregon.
I did. I started in Bend, Oregon. And then I walked to Portland, where it took about 2 weeks. And I knew I had already planned that I would start in Australia. Because as any smart person who does something for the first time, you just dive right in, right? So of course, I was a complete amateur, like just a few day hikes. You know, you and I kind of briefly talked about comfort. You know, it's like I would take a little backpack with a sandwich and water and maybe go hiking for the day, maybe do camping, but the car's nearby. And, you know, at least you knew in 2 days you could, you know, go home and take a shower. So I knew I wanted to dive into the outback in Australia. So I walked to Portland. I flew from Portland to Perth, which is in Southwest Australia. And I actually walked, instead of across, I walked north. I wanted to stay in Western Australia. I wanted to stay in the desert. So I walked north towards Darwin and I ended in a small Aboriginal community called Kalumburu. Now, just so you know, I've had a friend who described this really well, which was even though I walked around the world, there was a bit more flying and tinkering around than I thought there would be. And so she says that I more waltzed around the world. So I like to think, well, that's it. I waltzed. I danced a bit. So I had walked across Australia and then I went to Vietnam. I was planning to do Southeast Asia. But within 10 days I had gotten dengue fever and it had me reevaluate the whole walk and what I wanted to do. And, realized, you know, I love solitude. I had just finished Australia. Vietnam was it was a culture shock, to go from the outback, to people and cars and humidity. And I realized, you know, while I was healing from dengue that I wanted to be back in solitude. So I went up to I flew to Ulaanbaatar, Mongolia. And made my way through Central Asia. And I made it to Turkey, or to Istanbul in Turkey. And from there decided, well, I'm going to go do Scotland and England. And then, you know, I went back and I did Sardinia and Sicily, the two Italian islands. And during that time, because as an American, we only get 3 months at a time in Europe. So out of all the places I had been, Europe was actually the hardest to gain traction due to visas, but also because the wine and the people are really good. So sometimes being, and we'll talk more about that, but being invited into people's homes and I've made lifelong friends. And so, you know, as we know, an adventure is really about where it takes us and who we meet and those experiences along the way. And so while I was waiting for the ability to get back into Europe, I went and I did New Zealand. I walked across New Zealand and I went back to finish parts of England and did part the northern parts of Europe, Holland, Belgium, parts of France. My mom was actually with me for some of those. She had just turned 70. She couldn't do the walking, but she bought herself a recumbent three-wheeled, so it's a tricycle, and she pedaled for 3 miles an hour with me, inspiring all of the elderly women that we'd meet along the way that would just go, what, you're 70 and you're tenting outside with your daughter walking around the world? So she was quite an inspiration for people. And then my last, so if we do continents, Australia, Central Asia, Europe. And then I just finished this last year going across the states back to Oregon. So starting in DC and finished in Bend, Oregon.
Any favorite spots?
Oh, yes. And it depends on the parameter. So it would go something like this. Australia will always be my favorite country because it was the first continent. It was the harshest. It stripped me of the identity of who I was. You know, I was a 32-year-old woman at the time. It was just this kind of, you know, I built up a business. It's just stripped me. And here I am with, you know, terracotta dirt in my fingernails and, you know, I haven't showered in a month. And yet I felt so empowered and so strong and in a way very beautiful, as dirty as I was. And so I love the solitude. So I think Australia gave me the foundation and the encouragement that if I could survive that and enjoy it, surely I could keep walking for years to come. I think Australia was my favorite as a foundation. And Sardinia, the Italian island, was one of the most beautiful. And New Zealand, because there were no animals or venomous snakes to worry about. And the scenery is gorgeous. And I like the lifestyle. As they call them, there's lots of trampers, people who are hiking, and they have a great hut system. So you could hike almost the entirety of New Zealand, north to south, and probably only camp about 2 or 3 days total because they have cabin huts available for you along the trails. So yeah, there's quite a few favorites in terms of the relation to them.
How much advanced planning and research did you do?
Not too much. And, you know, one thing I would say is I like this to be an intuitive mapping experience. So for example, I always like to, and I work this way, I see a broader picture. So I saw the four continents. I had a general idea. I'm going west around the world, but to do Australia, I ended up going north. Doing Scotland, you know, down to England was south. But I was kind of slowly trying to make my way back to Oregon, westish. And I realized that because this was such a big idea, it was going to take so long. I knew that I needed to break it into doable chunks. So I ended up creating legs. So for example, I'd say, okay, I'm going to do Perth to Darwin. However, I didn't do Darwin. I ended in Colombaroo because as I met the people along the way and some of the Aboriginal community, they would say, how great is it for you to end in an Aboriginal community and to learn more and to support them as well, because you sometimes pay access to some of the beaches and whatnot. And so, you know, that who I met along the way shaped it. Or I'd say, okay, I want to get from, you know, Tbilisi, Georgia to Istanbul. I could go central and these are the things I could see, like Cappadocia, or I could stay up north along the Black Sea and I've got the water there, you know? And I would just start out and then let it kind of shape itself. So I would say not one single leg of my journey was ever the exact route from when I planned it.
That's such wonderful freedom.
Yes, it really is. I mean, it's oftentimes the most common people that I would run into were cyclists, because I mostly had, you know, a big duffel bag that sat on two wheels and then these long handlebars that I could push. And it was great to not have any weight on my body. But because of that, it meant there were certain trails I couldn't go onto. There were two times in the whole walk that I decided to backpack. I left the cart behind with, you know, some friends or people I had met. And then I take my backpack and decide to go hiking. But oftentimes I was on roads, back roads, sometimes highways even. And I would just meet tons of cyclists from all over the world. And one of the things that was so different other than the speed we were going is there's always usually a time limit and a need to get to a certain place because they've booked a room. You know, they know where they're going. The whole thing is planned. And so you just have to show up. And so it is a different way of adventuring when you say, well, I want to experience something. Maybe I don't even make it to you know, the end result because I'm going to let myself feel into the environment or the people I meet. And so I always say you want to give yourself a little breadth of time so that you can truly enjoy the spontaneous events.
Oh, I'm with you. I always say I need to follow the smell of wafting garlic. I mean, that's one of the imperatives in terms of travel.
It's like, where's the beautiful food that's coming? Yeah. That's right there, you know? You can't plan for the smells of the garlic and food. Yeah. Yeah.
Before, when you were getting ready to take off, was there a place of dis-ease, if you will, just discomfort with your current life? Was there an event that triggered this?
Oh, that's a great question. Not at all. And I, what I do find though is oftentimes we do wait for some type of crisis to have us want to change something, or you know, or just something that might be different than the way we're doing it. I actually was doing phenomenally well. I mean, I had my own coaching and consulting business. It was remote. I could do it from anywhere. I just moved to Bend, you know, a few months before, got myself a little cottage and right downtown. I could walk everywhere and everything was actually quite settled. And I think for me, it was more, well, life is kind of good. I've made it as a functioning adult. But I feel like I'm still seeking something more. And I didn't actively go out and say, I want to make a change. What can I do? I was actually in an art class as I was just experimenting with different creative expression. And I actually heard about a guy who was potentially walking. Well, it turned out he actually wasn't walking physically around the world, but he was a man who was in prison and had walked in a courtyard in a circle, kind of creating his own trail, but he had calculated as if he had. And that's where the light bulb went off. Like, but that's a brilliant idea. Like, who has walked? Surely someone's tried walking. I mean, other than the diaspora potentially of humankind, you know, there's got to be like some adventurer who's done this. And so I just started to get a little bit, you could say, obsessed. You know, who's done it? What men have done it? Has a woman done it? Did they walk? Did they cycle? You know, what routes did they take? And I just started devouring and getting inspired and encouraged. And I would say I wouldn't have made it out the door if it weren't for people who were sharing their stories and what they went through and, you know, how they did it. And it helped me to get started.
Any particular heroes that really inspired you?
Well, yeah, I think, well, it's interesting. A lot of people kind of jumped to Cheryl Strayed in Wild, which I hadn't actually, strangely, I don't know how it's possible, I hadn't actually heard about her book. And I believe the movie wasn't out yet, I think, when I started. I was finding really kind of interesting offshoots. So, for example, there's Fiona Campbell, who walked across four continents over a decade or so. She always had a team. So she had a support crew and she had some sponsorship. And she would walk up to, you know, 30 miles or so a day. And there's Rosie Swale Pope, who at 57 left her home in Wales to run solo around the world. There's also, you know, a lot of people know Robin Davidson, who took the camels across Australia in the 70s. And then there's also the classics, right? There's accounts of, you know, what it was like for Sacagawea, you know, crossing, you know, the U.S. and, you know, Jane Goodall. And so there's always just these stories of women who have done things a little bit outside of the box, but there are just a tremendous amount of female adventurers that most people never know of. And I had to really dig deep myself to kind of find those women.
A travel adventure like that becomes really an adventure inwards, doesn't it?
I think that ultimately it kind of has to be. I mean, even if someone doesn't have a foundational belief of spirit or religion or anything, that there's some place that still they find themselves connecting to nature. There's a way of just getting in touch with your thoughts. For me, it was very much a spiritual pilgrimage. I mean, I can't separate the sense of something greater than me guiding me. You know, that when I say I wanted the walk to take me on an adventure. I don't want to shape my adventure. I want the walk to shape me. I want to feel led. I want to fine tune my intuitive sense of where I'm going. And to then practice that in the sense of a walk and then continue that on in my life now. How do I maintain the feeling that I'm being guided, that I can listen and tune into what really is good for me? And also, as my motto that I really love that I'm working with in my life today is, you really never know what lies around the corner.
No, I totally agree. I've come to see life as a road trip.
Isn't it? I mean, there's people who are doing things a little bit, you know, that seem crazy. I mean, I wouldn't tell someone to go walk around the world to discover themselves or anything, but you know, there's a sense that no matter if someone's like cycling around the world or hiking the Pacific Crest Trail or walking around the world, they're still just chosen parallel adventures that we're having in motherhood, and being, you know, in a marriage, having a job and wanting to contribute in the world. I mean, they're all just these different paths that we choose to take, and we're all taking them together on this parallel adventure.
How hard has it been to integrate back into so-called, you know, normal life? And how do you hang on to that special spiritual connection that comes with a trip like you took?
Well, I think for the most part, when I'm feeling into what do I believe in around how I engage with the world around me and how I feel about myself. For example, when people ask me, you know, who was the Angela who left Bend and who's the one who came back? I can easily say, even though it took place from my early to my, you know, late 30s, I left still a bit of an adolescent, and through the walk, I feel like I've come back a little bit more mature in womanhood, and in the sense that it was getting comfortable in my skin. It's feeling confident in making my own decisions. It's that place that, you know, when I talked about being guided, that to me, this, there's no disconnect that I can have to what I believe is greater spirit that is always, you know, in tune with, you know, guiding me into the next place, the next experience. And so the one thing I have to practice being back now, and in the sense of, even though I'll still go do other expeditions, you know, the walk itself is at a completion. And so one, not only, you know, remembering there's always a miracle around the corner. You don't know what's waiting for you, who you're going to meet, and the adventure of it, to enjoy not knowing what's around the corner. But also in that place of, how do I continue to tune myself to what I believe is guiding me, that ever even got me out the door in the first place? It's meditation, it's breath work, it's taking the time to check in with myself of, you know, what's the next thing for me? What feels right for me? And not listening so much to the external as much as I'm listening to the internal.
What is courage to you?
It's a choice. I see courage as a choice. I see courage as a, and this is the TEDx talk that I gave, I called it courage as a verb because I see it as a motion. It is something that we have to choose and then step towards. And I think a lot of people have heard before, you know, that, you know, when you're fearless, it's not that you won't be afraid, but you know, you keep moving forward anyway. And I believe that that's very much what courage in action is. For example, when people ask, you know, weren't you afraid being a woman alone, sleeping in a tent most all the time in the bushes, you know, absolutely. Every day there was a moment of fear. And I'd go through it, whether it be, oh my gosh, am I going to find a good camping spot tonight? Is it going to be safe? You know, will I make it to this lake in time to fill up on water? There's always moments of kind of a fear and anxiety. But then using my mind, which also comes with a sense of greater, something greater than me guiding, but being practical and continuing to move forward, courage is something that doesn't take a grand adventure. I mean, we're doing this every day. There's some place in our life where we get anxiety and we choose to breathe and relax. That actually takes a bit of courage because we're stepping into something. It's almost wherever we meet the edges in our life, anything beyond our comfort, to me, is being courageous.
Thank you for joining us today. I hope you found something in today's podcast that inspires you along your own life's path, because sometimes a bump in the road is actually a portal into a more conscious and meaningful life. You can subscribe to our free podcast at www.bumpintheroad.us or become a premium member to hear the full conversation. Just go to www.bumpintheroad.us for more information and to sign up.